how fitting it is to engage in the ritual of dedicating a child this morning. Today, December 1st, marks the beginning of Advent in the Christian calendar. The 24 days of Advent mark the lead up to Christmas Day, designated as the birthday of Jesus in the 4th century by Emperor Constantine. Regardless of the way in which all of this came about, Christmas and the season of Advent preceding it have come to be wrapped with awe and wonder around the miracle of a baby's birth. Themes related to hope, peace, and joy, and love are woven finally into the meaning given to the life of the Christ child and wishes for the lives of all children. It is in communities of care, the places where kids are interacting with others, that they learn abiding values and how to make meaning from their experiences in the world. Children learn best through embodied interaction with their environment. Parents, and for some of you now as grandparents, probably remember how their babies were always putting things into their mouths, grasping at whatever was within reach, like a rose, crawling and toddling here and there to check out the next cool thing. Children are often described as human doings rather than human beings. Even those of us who have been parents to fur babies know the earliest time of a young one's life is filled with exploration and adventure, sometimes scaring us older human beings at the unconscious risks taken. Sadly, far too many of us grow cautious and uncurious about our world as we get older and busy with all the responsibilities of adulting. So I'd like to invite us into a time of guided meditation as a way to begin to loosen up our spirits, to perceive more awe and wonder. Make yourself comfortable where you are. You might wish to close the petals of your eyelids over your eyes, or you might choose to simply soften your gaze at a point several inches in front of your nose. Allow your arms and hands to rest lightly in your lap. Wiggle your sits bones in your seat. Wiggle your shoulders a little too, as you make sure that your spine is aligned between your head and your hips. You might roll your head a couple of times to work out the kinks. Now, take yourself back in time. Roll the months and years back. Let the weight of time lift off of you. Find your way back to something that catches your attention. Maybe it's not so long ago, actually. Or maybe you have to keep going, like an archaeologist, sweeping away one layer of sediment after another until something appears that deserves a closer look. Be curious. What is it? If it is an object of some kind, crouch down or move towards it and look at it more closely. What are the details you notice? Does it remind you of anything you know? What shape does it have? What are the colors you see? Is it moving or still? Is it a sound you hear? Can you see the source of this sound? Is it something you feel against your skin? Is it something alive or not a living thing? Is there an odor you smell? Does it smell pleasant or unpleasant? Does it have a taste? Is it something you'd like to eat? What can you do with it? Is it something you'd like to make a picture of? Can you make a story up about it? Or write a poem? How will you share your discovery, your awe and wonder with others? Express your delight and appreciation at the mysteries held within this moment in time in your own way. Now take a minute or so more to observe where you are, the things around you, before you come back to this time and this place. When you are ready, bring yourself fully into the present moment here in the sanctuary of our worship service. Feel free to wiggle some more and feel what it means to be fully alive and awesomely made. In the chalice lighting words of Sophia Lyon Foss, one of our beloved Unitarian religious educators of the 20th century, she encourages parents to sense and share with their children the glory and mystery of everyday things. The same kinds of things that Albert Einstein observed with wonder throughout his life, but others took for granted. For Einstein, it didn't matter whether the everyday thing was as small as an ant or as vast as the cosmos. It was all worthy of slowing down, stopping, and gazing intently without speaking. In an essay entitled Deep Play, which you can find in the September issue of Quest, Sandra Fees explores the value of play as a spiritual practice. We all need play. Both children and adults are play deprived in this day and age, which leads to physical, social, intellectual, and psychological deficits. Play isn't some frivolous activity, although Margaret Gunther has characterized it as holy uselessness. It isn't play if its purpose is more important than the act itself. Play isn't something we do in a superficial way. It arises from deep within us, allowing us to be authentically ourselves. And play has a religious quality to it, according to Diane Ackerman. Deep play reveals our need to seek a special brand of transcendence with a passion that makes thrill-seeking understandable, creativity possible, and religion inevitable. Our living tradition draws from many sources. If you open the gray hymnal to hymn number 1 and turn back one page, you'll find on the left-hand side our 7 principles, followed by 5 or 6 sources. Please read the first source with me. It is the first 3 lines, beginning with direct experience, saying together, direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder, affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces that create and uphold life. If the hymnal In Your Hands was published in or after 1995, it includes the 6th source, spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. Sandra Fees points out that although neither of these sources explicitly mentions play, if we read between the lines, we realize that play is implied. Play and wonder go hand in hand. Play renews the spirit. Play opens us up to creativity, she writes. We celebrate the circle of life through each of the elements of worship: music, story, drama, prayer, and ritual. One of the things that I love about Brew is that you love to work and play together. Your engagement with the tasks most might tend to label as work blurs with play because of the fun that occurs along with it. I resonate with this blurred line between work and play. Play, according to Alison Wilbur Eskildsen, another contributor to the Quest issue on thinking about work and play, brings a delight in the task, a lightness of being that is critically needed as we do the hard work of making the world a better place through our social and environmental justice efforts. We need that lightness of being when faced with physical and mental health challenges, even in the face of death. As Eskildsen summarizes, we need play to maintain our emotional, spiritual, and physical balance so that we can do the work that desperately needs doing. If play is defined as activity done for its own sake, characterized by means rather than ends, the process is more important than the goal, what would it be like, as Tandy Rogers suggests, to imagine the possible fallout of play as spiritual practice? She surmises that with no goals, no ends, just joy, surrender, humility, the very spiritual maturity we try to manufacture in our self-improvement would simply arise out of our practice of play for its own sake. In other words, we would affirm and promote play-filled spiritual growth and playfully engage in a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. What does play as spiritual practice conjure up in your life? Remember that whatever it is you would do as play needs to be for its own sake, not to accomplish some other goal. Would it be making up silly songs? Dancing with wild abandon? Finger painting? Skipping down the street? How many of you occasionally skip down the street? I see a few hands. Wearing funny hats? Building fairy houses in the woods? Pretending to be a character in a story and acting out that story? How many of you know about spirit play? A couple people, RE teachers. Spirit play is a curriculum that our youngest children use to explore UU values. It's modeled after an Episcopal religious education program called Godly Play. Spirit play classes include the telling of a story with objects to represent key characters and ideas, at the end of which the adult guiding the children, and note guiding the children, asks wondering questions. For example, I wonder what Einstein felt when his family called him Der Departee. After the storytelling and wondering questions, the children use an activity referred to as their work, which really blurs the lines between work and play, such as working or playing with the story pieces, doing artwork such as painting or drawing, working with blocks or Legos, or reading books. They might ask themselves, I wonder how high I can stack these blocks before they fall. I wonder in what ways the spiritual practice of play might bring me more opportunities to delight in wonder and awe. Personally, I do a lot of my wondering while I'm walking. I spot something within my line of sight. It might be a shape or a color that catches my eye, or a sound gets my attention and I look for the source of it. I wonder. I wonder as I wander. In seminary, one of the first assignments given to my class at Meadville was a beauty walk. We needed to take a walk around our home neighborhood. For most people, this was familiar territory, and the idea was to look around in a new way, noticing details they would not normally overlook because they lived there every day. For me, it was a chance to explore my new environs because I had just moved to Chicago's South Side. As an aside, I noticed in preparing for this service that there is a meditation practice called an awe walk, which I think is the same idea as what we were asked to do for the beauty walk. Whatever you call it, it's a great exercise in slowing down and observing without talking, bringing your child's eyes to the walk, looking with curiosity and asking yourself wondering questions. You can journal about your insights and impressions later. What did you notice that you hadn't seen before? I'd like to close my sermon with the words of Reverend Marnie Harmony, "If we do not venture out." If, on a starlit night, with the moon brightly shimmering, we stay inside and do not venture out, the evening universe remains a part of life we shall not know. If on a cloudy day with grayness infusing all and rain dancing like rivers in the grass, we stay inside and do not venture out, the stormy, threatening energy of the universe remains a part of life we shall not know. If on a frosty morning, dreading the chilling air before the sunrise, we stay inside and do not venture out, the awesome cold, quiet, and stillness of the dawn universe remains a part of life we shall not know. If throughout these grace-given days of ours, surrounded as we are by green life and brown death, hot pink joy and cold gray, pain and miracles, always miracles, if we stay inside ourselves and do not venture out, then the fullness of the universe shall be unknown to us, and our locked hearts shall never feel the rush of worship. Amen. Blessed be. Namaste.